Welcome to Royally Screwed. My name is Chris Shearer, and it's my honor to take you on a tour through some of history's greatest, worst, and bizarre rulers. It's the holiday season once again, so I figured I would cover a seasonally appropriate figure. If you looked at the title of this episode, you might be a bit confused. And if that's the case, then you are almost certainly not Buddhist. Yes, it's not just Christians, Jews, and neo-pagans with holidays to celebrate in December. Every year, on the 8th of December, many Buddhists around the world celebrate what is called Bodhi Day, a celebration remembering the supposed day on which Siddhartha Gautama, a man from ancient Nepal, achieved enlightenment and became the figure we know as the Buddha. I should also note that this holiday is not celebrated by all Buddhists, mainly just those in China, Japan, and Korea, as well as people around the world who practice forms of Buddhism developed in those countries. A similar holiday called Vesak, celebrating the birth, enlightenment, and death of Siddhartha, is celebrated in May by Buddhists of Southern Asia, Tibet, and Mongolia. And even for those that do celebrate Bodhi Day, it's usually not even the biggest celebration of the year. However, it's a holiday in December, so let's roll with that. I think it's safe to say that most people have at least heard of the Buddha. Maybe a bit less know that his name was Siddhartha Gautama. And possibly even less people know that he's not actually the same person as the more heavy-set Laughing Buddha, a different Buddhist figure known as Budai. So, as this is the first major religious figure slash religious founder I've covered, we've got to set some ground rules here. Almost every single figure who is said to have started a major world religion has been so mythologized that figuring out a true history of their life is next to impossible, especially with someone who lived as long ago as Siddhartha. Also, different sects of Buddhism have different traditions about when he lived. So, that's to say that this episode will try to take a look at all the different narratives surrounding Siddhartha's life in order to try to figure out some sort of truth, or at least to give you a good basis on who he might have been. So, without further ado, let's begin the story. We're going back in time to ancient Nepal, sometime before 400 BCE, in A Buddha Under the Tree. This background history lesson will be a bit more all over the place than usual due to, what I hope I got across, the fact that we don't really know when Siddhartha lived. We technically don't even know where he lived, though our best bet is somewhere within what is now the nation of Nepal, if not northern India. As far as when he lived, like I said, that's even more complicated. Different traditions give wildly different dates, many dating his life based on the rule of Ashoka the Great, an emperor who ruled in India in the late 3rd century BCE. In East Asian Buddhism, the type of Buddhism that would celebrate Bodhi Day, Siddhartha is said to have died in 949 BCE. This is the furthest back basically any date is given, and is almost certainly not factual. The traditions of some Indian and Tibetan Buddhists give his death around 833 BCE, and this again is still probably too far back. Other traditions in Sri Lanka have him living between 624 to 544 BCE. These sources list Ashoka's reign as beginning in 326 BCE. Other sources using this tradition use dates for Ashoka's reign from Greek sources, who would have been in the area thanks to Alexander the Great, who say Ashoka was crowned in 268 BCE. This version using the Greek sources would have Siddhartha living between 566 to 486 BCE. Both of these traditions, given the name Long Chronology, say that Siddhartha died 180 years before the coronation of Ashoka. However, there's also the Short Chronology, that says Siddhartha died only 100 years before Ashoka's coronation. More modern historians, though not all of them, have kinda just started saying he was born somewhere between 550 and 480 BCE. So yeah, it's all very confusing. Luckily, almost every source over the Buddha's life has him living to be about 80 years old, so at least there's some consistency there. So, what was happening in Southern Asia at this time? Well, with that much history, we have to potentially work with a lot. Well, let's completely toss out the 10th and 9th century dates to make things a little easier. For centuries, India was mostly occupied by people following Vedic traditions, Vedic referring to the Vedas, the sacred texts of Hinduism, though this was technically a cultural religious tradition that predated Hinduism. During this time in history, much of what we would consider staples of mainland Indian culture developed, such as the caste system and a rise in vegetarianism. This Vedic period lasted for about a millennia, lasting from about 1500 to 500 BCE, that end date kinda corresponding to the time period in which Siddhartha probably lived. The Vedic period was essentially a bridge between the earlier Indus Valley civilization, one of the earliest human civilizations in the world centered around, you guessed it, the Indus River, and the Mahajanapandas period. The Indus Valley civilization was kind of this first era of urbanization, with large cities rising up along the Indus River before those cities eventually were abandoned, the main theory being that parts of the Indus River dried out, forcing the IVC people to migrate further east. The Mahajanapandas period was a second era of urbanization lasting from roughly 700 to 500 BCE. Mahajanapanda refers to 16 different republics that developed in northern India and southern Nepal. One of these Mahajanapandas was Kosala, which had several vassal states underneath it. One of these vassal states was the Shakya Republic, which is traditionally said to be the birthplace of the Buddha. Also within the Mahajanapandas period, we see a rise in certain cultures moving away from the orthodox Vedic religious traditions. These movements are often referred to as Shramana, which in the Vedic culture means an ascetic or someone who is seeking a higher religious purpose through hardship. While Buddhism was far from the first Shramana religion to break off from the pre-Hindu Vedic religion, it is by far the most famous of this era. But who was the man behind the religion? How does someone go from a follower of the Vedic traditions, as well as someone who greatly prospered during the Mahajanapandas period, to one of the most important figures in Asian history? So, there are zero primary sources on Siddhartha's life. That being said, it is generally considered that he was in fact a real person. The first solid bits of written history we have about him are from around the 3rd century BCE, so around the time Buddhism had really become its own thing and taken hold of the region. Many of the early Buddhist traditional texts were written in the Pali language, which is technically a dead language, though it didn't really become a dead language until about the 18th century. That being said, it is still used to recite prayers in some sects of Southern Buddhism, much like Latin in Christianity. This is all to say that it is very hard to get a concrete grasp on anything about the Buddha's life outside of what is written in the sacred texts of Buddhism. These traditional texts are referred to as the Pali Canon, though there are also, at least for some schools of Buddhism, supplemental Chinese scriptures. Much of the Pali Canon is allegedly the teachings that were spoken by the Buddha to his first students, and some of it is even Siddhartha telling his own life story. I don't want to have to rely solely on religious texts for this episode as the primary sources, or I guess secondary sources for Siddhartha's life, but that's just how this is gonna have to play out. So, ironically, we should technically be jumping even further back in time for just a second, rather than immediately saying that Siddhartha Gautama was probably born in Nepal to a noble family around 500 BCE. The mythological beginnings of Buddhism are written about in the Jataka Tales, a series of stories important to Buddhists that were written in various languages used in India, though mainly Sanskrit. The Jataka claim that Siddhartha Gautama was not the original incarnation of the figure we call the Buddha. In fact, he is just one incarnation of a being that had already lived hundreds of lives. Sometimes he was royalty, other times he was a priest, sometimes he was an animal and not a human. In each life, he would learn lessons that would help him eventually become the man he would come to be. In the Jataka, Siddhartha's previous lives are referred to as the Bodhisattva. A Bodhisattva is a person who is on the path of becoming a Buddha, meaning someone who has reached enlightenment and escaped the cycle of rebirth. A Bodhisattva is also usually considered to be someone who has technically achieved enlightenment, but has decided to put it off for the time being so that they may guide the rest of humanity towards the path of enlightenment. And so, with all that out of the way, as I said before, we don't know when Siddhartha Gautama was born. He was probably, at least according to a tradition, born in the Shakya Republic. In fact, Siddhartha is also sometimes called the Shakyamuni, which is Sanskrit for the Sage of Shakya. And with that little bit of information, we can finally begin our story. It's believed that Siddhartha's father was a man named Suddhodana, who at the time of Siddhartha's birth was a member of the oligarchic nobility ruling over Shakya. This would mean that the future Buddha was born into a fairly luxurious life. Granted, I feel like most stories overstep how wealthy and well-off he was. After all, the Shakya Republic was a smaller vassal state to the larger Kosala Kingdom. If he did indeed live in the Shakya Republic around 500 BCE, then he was probably decently well off, but not living in extreme wealth. The stories of the birth of Siddhartha are all very mythological in nature. The most common one is that his mother, Suddhodana's wife Maya, had a dream that she was visited by a massive white elephant with six tusks. This impossible elephant then entered into her body. Very soon afterwards, Maya discovered she was pregnant. According to traditions from the time, she would need to travel to her father's home to give birth. However, along the way, while Maya was traveling through what is now Lumbini, Nepal, she went into labor. Under the shade of a sal tree, Maya gave birth to Siddhartha. Some later stories say that immediately after being born, Siddhartha stood up and took 7 steps forward, each time leaving a lotus flower's blossom growing in his footsteps. He then turned to his mother and said that this was his final birth, recalling his previous lifetimes. I personally can't imagine a more horrifying thing to happen right after giving birth. Continuing on from weird walking, talking babies, Siddhartha's parents were presenting him to the public when a wise ascetic man named Asita approached the couple. He looked at the baby Siddhartha and proclaimed that he could tell this child would either become a very powerful king or a very important religious figure. Obviously, we know what path he would eventually go down. However, Suddhodana was convinced this would mean his son would become a great ruler. From there, Siddhartha was allegedly raised in a strange form of isolation from the general public within his father's palace. According to the Pali Canon, his father even went so far as to make sure Siddhartha was constantly covered in shade so that the sun could not touch his skin. Somehow, this would make him the perfect ruler. Apparently, he was also raised only by younger female attendants so that the young nobleman never saw an aging man. This was probably also to distract Siddhartha with sexual desires rather than any type of religious thoughts. In the stories, Siddhartha was also given three separate palaces, one for summer, one for winter, and one for the rainy season. Now again, the Shakya Republic was not the height of luxury, so that bit is at least probably false, even if other parts of Siddhartha's strange life are true. Siddhartha also eventually married a woman named Yasodhara, probably his cousin, and together they had a son named Rahula. The future Buddha lived this idyllic life for almost 30 years, completely separated from the true existence of the world. Every need of his was immediately taken care of. Anything he desired came true. Then one day, Siddhartha left the palace. He was traveling with his much more world-weary charioteer Chahana. Why did he leave the palace? That's not really known or important. Some stories seem to imply that he had an existential crisis and suddenly wanted to go out into the world. Well, this trip would change Siddhartha's life forever. While traveling, Siddhartha came across four different people. The first was a sick man. The second was a very old man. The third was a corpse. At each site, Siddhartha asked Chahana what this new and unusual type of person was, since Siddhartha had grown up never seeing people in these conditions. Chahana explained that sickness, aging, and death were all part of life. This horrified Siddhartha. However, continuing on their journey, the pair came across an ascetic monk. The monk looked like he was at peace. When Siddhartha asked him why he was so calm when the world was, as he had just discovered, a terrifying place, the monk responded that his lifestyle, that of meditation, extreme fasting, and nonviolence, helped him overcome those fears of the world. With that advice, Siddhartha Gautama decided that he would leave his life as a noble. Once again, he snuck out of his father's palace. He abandoned everything, his wealth, his family, and his own previous sense of peace. He would become an ascetic monk and find inner peace. Siddhartha's choice to abandon his former life is known as the Great Renunciation, and is sometimes viewed as the beginnings of Buddhism. Siddhartha did not, in fact, find inner peace as an ascetic monk. He had traveled south into modern-day India and met with the local ascetics. From there, he met with local Vedic teachers and learned how to meditate and recite the proper sutras that were supposed to lead him to enlightenment. So, for several years, Siddhartha deprived himself of almost everything. He cut his hair, barely ate, and wore the robes of a monk. The only food he ever ate was small spoonfuls of vegetable soups every now and then. In the section of the Pali Canon where Siddhartha talks about this part of his life, he paints this pretty gruesome picture of how he was basically a skeleton with skin over it. He said that if he were to grab hold of his stomach, he was essentially also touching his spine. That's how thin he was. He apparently also couldn't hold himself up properly when going to the bathroom. Obviously, this was no way to live. However, Siddhartha knew he couldn't go back to his life as a nobleman in Shakya. There, he was just surrounded by fleeting pleasures. He would just be tricking himself that life was okay, even though he knew there was plenty of suffering that was just a natural part of life. But he also couldn't stay on the path he was currently on. Starving himself to the point of basically being dead while reciting sutras had brought him no closer to enlightenment. Some of the Buddhist stories say that Siddhartha officially renounced this new path when he was approached by someone from a nearby village. This villager, traditionally said to be a woman named Sujata, saw the emaciated monk and decided to offer him some rice porridge. Even though Siddhartha knew it was against the teachings he was supposed to follow, he accepted the food and ate it all. He had practiced extreme fasting for nearly 6 years. When the other ascetics he traveled with learned that Siddhartha had broken his fast, They believed he was abandoning his desire to seek enlightenment, and they essentially kicked him out of their monastic group. The future Buddha decided to undergo his own method of meditation to seek enlightenment his own way. He would still renounce earthly pleasures, though he would not starve himself while praying. This new method of enlightenment seeking is referred to as the Middle Way. Siddhartha traveled until he arrived in what is now the religious site called Bodh Gaya, known back then as Uruvela in the Indian state of Bihar. He eventually found a comfortable spot beneath a fig tree and decided he would sit there meditating until he reached enlightenment. For 7 days he sat there, just meditating. In some later Buddhist stories, he's said to have been visited by the demonic Vedic god Mara, who is the source of evil in the world. Mara apparently knew what was about to go down and sent a horde of demons to distract the young monk. However, stuck to his convictions, Siddhartha was not deterred. Instead, he simply placed his hand on the ground. You'll still see Buddha represented this way, seated with his legs crossed, eyes closed, and one hand pointing towards the ground. This scared the demons away. On the 7th day, Siddhartha Gautama finally came to a realization about the world. He had found the answer he had seeked out all those years ago. As I said before, the site he is said to have achieved enlightenment is called Bodh Gaya. The species of the fig tree he was said to have sat under has been given the taxonomical name Ficus religiosa, which is more commonly known as the Bodhi tree, Bodhi being the Sanskrit and Pali word for enlightenment. It is believed that this day was the 8th day of the 12th month of the year. Now, this would have been celebrated on a different day with other historical calendars, but with the mass westernization of the world and the acceptance of the Gregorian calendar in most nations, this puts the date of Siddhartha's enlightenment, the day he truly became the Buddha, as the 8th of December. So, what great truth did the Buddha discover on Bodhi Day that led him to enlightenment? Well, that truth is the basic tenets of Buddhism. So, what exactly do Buddhists believe? Well, the most basic beliefs are the Four Noble Truths that Siddhartha realized during his 7 days that resulted in his enlightenment. These truths are explained in various ways throughout the Pali Canon and other Buddhist texts, so I'll try to use the most basic versions of them here. Usually, each truth is associated with a Pali or Sanskrit word that then explains the larger truth. The first noble truth is dukkha. Dukkha is usually translated as suffering, but can also mean unable to achieve satisfaction. This noble truth explains that dukkha is a natural part of life. Now, usually this means that the first truth is translated to suffering is a part of life. To me, that makes it sound like other phrases like life is unfair, which is really not the heart of this noble truth. The truth of dukkha is more like there will be many moments of feeling unsatisfied with life due to the fact that many things are transient in nature. You will not always be happy. A good meal will eventually be eaten and you will be hungry again. You'll love people and lose them. You will age, you will get sick. These are just parts of life. The second noble truth is samudaya. Samudaya means the origin of something. Here, samudaya is referring to the origins of dukkha. According to the Buddha, the origins of dukkha come from desire. Now, as we've learned, many things in life come and go, leading us to feel unsatisfied. The more things we desire, the more likely we are to have feelings of unsatisfactoriness. This only leads to more desires, therefore leading to more dukkha. And if you believe in reincarnation like the people who practice Vedic-derived religions do, then that is just an endless cycle of desire leading to dukkha. This cycle of rebirth is known in the Vedic religions as samsara. The third noble truth is nirodha. Nirodha is translated as cessation, so an ending to something. The Buddha came to the realization that there is in fact a way to end your possibly endless ride on the wheel of samsara. Life does not have to be craving, suffering, desiring, and then feeling even more unsatisfied forever. It is in fact possible to release yourself from the cycle of samsara, and that cessation is by achieving Buddhahood. Well, that's a fairly large order. Well, that's where the fourth noble truth comes in, magga or marga. Marga means path. This path is following the Dhamma, or the teachings of the Buddha. By the way, Dhamma is also referred to as Dharma, with the former being the Pali word and the latter being Sanskrit. The Dhamma is usually represented as following the Eightfold Path as laid out by the Buddha. The Eightfold Path is the next major part of the tenets of Buddhism. The eight parts of the Eightfold Path are as follows. 1. Right view. This means having a proper understanding of the Four Noble Truths. 2. Right resolve. This could technically be viewed differently depending on which school of Buddhism you follow. Originally, it meant having the wherewithal to leave your life behind in order to follow the path of the Buddha, usually by becoming a monk. 3. Right speech. Don't lie or say abusive things to others. 4. Right action. You shouldn't steal from others, injure others, rape, or try your best to not have material desires. 5. Right livelihood. This means going into a profession that does not bring harm to others, whether it is humans or animals. So don't be a slave trader, arms dealer, drug dealer, etc. 6. Right effort. This means to try your best to create a positive, wholesome, and harmonious environment, both for yourself and others. So be kind to others and work to avoid being in a negative headspace. The Buddha wants you to go to therapy to work things out. 7. Right mindfulness. Try to be present in the moment. Make mental notes of how you're doing and how you can try to better yourself. Again, the Buddha wants you to go to therapy. The eighth and final part of the Eightfold Path is right samadhi, or right concentration. This eighth part of the Eightfold Path is about doing proper meditation to achieve the right focus so you can complete the other parts of the Eightfold Path. When you break it down, it's actually a much more simple system than you would think. Be kind to yourself and others and recognize that constant desires won't make you any happier. Obviously, different schools of Buddhism can interpret these teachings in different ways. This is all a very personal journey in order to achieve Buddhahood. But if you can follow the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, you too can become a Buddha, just like Siddhartha Gautama. Soon after achieving enlightenment, the Buddha had a brief crisis over what he was to do with this new information he had discovered. According to the Pali Canon, the great god Brahman told Siddhartha that he was to share knowledge of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path with others, something the Buddha had initially been skeptical about since he wasn't a teacher. He eventually found the other ascetics he had traveled with before who had rejected Siddhartha after he broke his fast. He eventually convinced them that he had achieved enlightenment and they became his first students. From there, the Buddha and his disciples traveled across northern India and Nepal, teaching the earliest form of Buddhism. One of the first major supporters of Buddhism was King Bimbisara of the Mahajanapanda Magadha. Bimbisara was also said to have been a proponent of many of the new religious movements that popped up in northern India around this time, such as Jainism. Eventually, the Buddha traveled back to his homeland in Shakya. After hearing his teachings, the Buddha's son and father converted and became Buddhist monks. His father, Suddhodana, is also said to have achieved some level of enlightenment, By the way, there are multiple levels of enlightenment in Buddhism, but we're not going to get into that right now. Rahula, his son, also achieved enlightenment, but at least in some traditions, chose to become a bodhisattva rather than a full Buddha, in order to help prepare the way for a great future Buddha known as the Maitreya Buddha. Again, we're not going to get into that right now. The Buddha continued teaching for about 40 years or so after his enlightenment. At some point, he apparently settled down in the kingdom of Kosala. According to traditional Buddhist scripts, Siddhartha Gautama died from food poisoning. What food is apparently hotly debated. Not the most dignified death for a major religious figure. More recent historians suggest that he probably actually died from complications in old age. Nonetheless, at about 80 years old, the Buddha gave his final sermon before entering into a final state of meditation. From there, he passed away, finally achieving nirvana. I feel like it's easy to have some sort of preconceived notion about what nirvana is. I know I did for sure before researching this episode. However, you may be surprised that not even Buddhists are united on what it is. Some think that it's an actual place that is free from the cycle of samsara, so not the most distant idea of some sort of paradise or heaven. However, within the cycle of rebirth, someone can be reborn into one of several heavens, including the gods, that is not nirvana. And yes, that means gods in Buddhism, which, yes, those exist in Buddhism, can die and be reincarnated. There are other Buddhists who believe that nirvana is more of a concept that is just total erasure from samsara. So when you achieve nirvana, that's it. There's just nothing. But what both of those theories, as well as others that exist, believe is that nirvana is what finally allows a person to be freed from the concept of dukkha. And while Siddhartha Gautama may not have been the first person to achieve Buddhahood, at least according to Buddhism, and enter nirvana, he has sure become the most famous. But for now, that's it for this episode of Royally Screwed. I hope you enjoyed the journey. Be sure to subscribe to the show and tell a friend all about it. I wish you all a happy holidays no matter which ones you do or do not celebrate. And I'd love it if you'd continue to join me for the show as we move into 2026. I hope you'll join me then for another topsy-turvy look into history's most interesting rulers.